A station that's giving you back the power to speak your mind. The all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5.
Officer Jude Rogers, good afternoon, Rogers. I didn't play no ads. We're just going straight to Jude. Jude, have a
good afternoon, David. Good afternoon to our listeners on 106.5 Freedom FM. I hope you hear me loud and clear this afternoon,
yeah,
David.
Boy, loud. Loud.
And clear.
And clear. Much clarity in you.
Right. All right. So it's not often that I come here. I normally come here with a smile. I normally come here with some sort of anecdote, some sort of message that will bring about either some sort of knowledge or relief. But also sometimes I have to come here on very sad notes.
Yeah.
And the topic I want to discuss this afternoon is one that I'm bringing because it's something that I'm noticing has had increase within recent times, Davey. And you and I were talking about this before I came back out on air. Mm-hmm. And it speaks to the question of arson and the arson attacks that we've been seeing on the news and in the general public in Trinidad and Tobago within recent times. And that has become an issue that we have to address because citizens are. And for the want of a definition, what does it mean to for arson? We're talking about any person who maliciously sets fire to any matter or thing being in or against or under any building. So once you set any particular building, it could be someone's property, and you set that to burn, that is an arrestable offense. But it goes so far to say, Davey, that if you were to set to burn a building, knowing that persons are in that building,
they murder.
The penalty for that is actually life imprisonment.
Whoa.
All right? Upon conviction. But if you were to do it not knowing, as they say, you burn a building, there was no occupant or anything of the sort, upon summary conviction, that is 10 years. 10 years. So we see the seriousness of arson and the weight that it carries. The weight it carries is as much as life imprisonment, because the fact of the matter is fire can be used as a mechanism not just to destroy property, not just to burn down your property and to burn your business like what we've been seeing in the news, but also to cause bodily harm and even death to citizens. So we want to address that this afternoon. We want to talk a little bit about that. And there's a question I want to address as well. Can I, as a normal citizen, can I make my building, my property, fireproof? Or can I minimize the effect of a willful raising of fire against my property? Because people are using these things, Davey, as a mechanism to draw you out and as an attack to get at you. So it means, therefore, that we have to look at whether or not we can make our buildings, our property, a little more resistant or resilient to fires. And that's how I want to lay the foundation for our discussion this afternoon.
Well, let's get right into it, because I'm a bit confused somewhat to what you were explaining. We are seeing arson on the rise. And
yes,
we so much so that certain people are being accused of, you know, certain prominent figures are being accused of soliciting the services of persons to commit crimes. I say certain persons of prominence in this country. I'm not going to call names, but we are seeing it out there. It's alleged, you know, we're seeing certain information coming to light. Whether fact or fiction, only time will tell. But I'm very happy that you touched the topic, because people think that arson is something lightly. And I want you all to understand, you can be convicted of murder if you commit arson. Because if somebody dies in that fire, that's not manslaughter. That's murder.
No.
Because you would have willfully set that building on fire and caused the death of people.
That's right.
Pilots.
Because in this case, arson is the mechanism
for death,
by which you would have caused the death of another human being.
Well, I just want to talk about pilots. There are pilots that fly aircrafts all over the world. And there, there are plane crashes. Do you know? Do you know that if a plane is brought down and it can be determined, and let's say every landing that you can walk away from is a safe one. It's a safe one. Whether it's a crash landing or a routine landing. If the plane crashes and everybody walk away, it's a safe, it was a good one. The thing about it is, do you know that if a pilot is being found guilty of what is known as pilot error in the cockpit, because there are several things that pilots need to do in the event of an emergency on board an aircraft. So the aircraft comes down in a forced landing, an emergency landing, and caused the death of three persons on board. Three souls on board lost their lives. Do you know that those pilots are held for manslaughter? Think about it.
And that is as that is also similar in the case where you are driving and you may have caused the death of another person. You can be held for vehicular manslaughter.
Motor manslaughter, you know, vehicular manslaughter. You can be charged.
The number of accidents on the highway, because the mechanisms that we have and the vehicle itself is a mechanism by which you can cause harm to another human being.
Exactly. Exactly. And I want persons to know that. So when we talk about fires, all right, when we talk about fires and arson in this country, one must understand that we are not happy with what we are seeing happening with the scene on the arson scene. We are not happy with it because we are seeing people losing millions of dollars. The fire service department or the fire service, they are mandated to save life and protect
and
property.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's life and property. And when we look at that recent fire out there, now you and I talked, let me get it, looking at you, because you messaged me a few weeks ago on what was happening with the increase in arson and the malicious raising of fires.
That's right.
Before we talk about that, a burning question came to me yesterday, was it? No. Yeah. Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday evening. I was coming down the road, heading in a western direction. And on the northern range, there was a blaze.
I saw it, Davey. I saw it too.
So the person asked me, but how it is somebody could go up there and set a fire out there? I will give you my comment, but I want you to answer question. I'm not going to say what I answered and said. I will allow you to answer. I said, right now, those animals are running scared for their lives. We have snakes, monkeys, armadillos, whatever animal that is in our forested areas, they are running scared for their lives. Now, it was up in the northern range. Jude, you saw it. You witnessed it. Let us tell the public how a fire like that could have started.
Okay, so when you see a fire in an area that is not close to a populated zone, and especially now that we are still in the bushfire season is going to run all the way up to June 30th. And some people feel just because we're seeing some rain falling, like what we're having this afternoon, that the bushfire season ended, and it hasn't. The temperatures that we are getting on average are still in excess of 30 degrees Celsius. So when people think that they can actually go into the forest, and most of the times you would have persons going into the forest to either clear land for, let's say, some form of agricultural activity. You may have persons who may go into the forest and set up camps, whether they're hunting camps or whatever the case may be. But that particular obvious zone where we saw that fire, Davey, it would have started by a human. And I'm saying this without putting any water in my mouth, that fire was started by a human element.
You serious?
All right? I am serious. And so that is an offense. And under the Agriculture Fires Act, that carries a $20,000 fine and 6 months imprisonment upon summary conviction. And my prayer and my hope is that anybody who would have started that or who has information on who may have started that fire, whether inadvertently or willfully, that they should bring that information either to the fire service or to the police so we can have that addressed. That's a very serious issue, because what it does, as you rightfully said, it affects the flora and fauna of the Northern Range. Mm-hmm. And that is a protected zone.
Exactly. Not just a protected area. When it comes to flooding, when the real crux of the rainy season kicks off, when we burn our vegetation like that, we are affecting our own selves, because trees and bushes and shrubs to hold back the soil, the erosion, and everything up there in the hills coming down to meet you, you know.
That is exactly what is the end product of what we call deforestation due to bushfires and due to wildfires in the forest. Because many of the trees that are burnt there may not make a recovery. And so the soil, the topsoil becomes loose. And we only feel the effects. And that particular area that we were looking at there, and I'm so glad it wasn't in the Mount St. Benedict area.
Boy,
it was a little lower down between that the Chakarigo and the Arima area that we saw burning.
Okay.
It pained my heart, Davey. And I could imagine other members of society were seeing that, and they were accessing. And then accessing that fire by the fire service puts its own challenge, because now we have to go after a fire like that on foot, because there's no appliance, no fire engine, no fire truck that can actually make it up. And there may not even be a roadway to access there. So you have to access it through the trails, and you have to literally go up there using on foot, so to speak.
Yeah, literally.
But I don't want to digress too far away.
Let's go back.
All of what you're talking about is very pertinent. And I want you to give out the numbers, because I'm expecting to get some questions in relation to arson. Because people have been asking me, Officer Rogers, if I want to protect my home against arson, what type of materials should I be building my home with? How high my wall should be? Should I have, how far away from the fence line my building should be? Should I have my car parked in my garage? Davey, I will give you instances, and I want to go into a live thing where a vehicle was firebombed, and the vehicle, while burning, caused the building to burn down afterwards. So there's some considerations that we have to make, whether or not your vehicle should be exposed. Because if I were to throw a Molotov cocktail over, Davey, and your vehicle gets caught on fire, remember your vehicle have gasoline in the tank. It may have a fuel source which is flammable, all right? And when that vehicle starts to burn, and the material that is attached to, let's say you have a wooden roof, and that roof catches a fire, and then the wooden rafters throughout your entire home, then you realize how you have become susceptible.
Yeah.
So we have to look at it from the standpoint of cause and effect. We have to look at it from the standpoint, how can I make my home, how can I make my property a bit more difficult in case I come under attack? Because now, Davey, the conversation I wanted to have with you is really and truly to advise members of the public to buy smoke detectors and fire extinguishers and to do the evacuation drill on a period. But here I have to come now to tell you, hey, you may have to think twice in terms of leaving your parked vehicle in an open garage. Here I have to come now and tell you, you may want to think twice about leaving a vehicle parked close to your home. You may want to think twice about using wooden rafters. You may want to build a beautiful home, and wood might be the best, or organic material might be the best mechanism. But now you have to go and look at steel and concrete,
because,
and not look at that type of material, because it is something that is going to propagate a fire. And so now we are more or less having to literally place ourselves in almost like we're in a barracks or a garrison. And this is the nature of the challenge that we face. Davey, one of the things that pains my soul when I look at other societies in our world, there in the world today, there are countries where crime and certain issues is not even an issue. So the budget that is spent on crime could be spent on social development of the people. So even those are factors that we look at, Davey. The more money we have to spend on national security, the more money we have to spend on protecting our homes, protecting our families from all sorts of criminal activity, is the more that we have to taken away from putting towards the development of the youth and the well-being of our citizens. So this is why I'm on the air today to give these little tidbits and these little tips that can help persons to say, hey, you know, Officer Rogers, say, maybe I may need to reconsider using a PVC ceiling. I may have to go with a gypsum ceiling, you know. And these are some of the considerations.
I tell you, one time, go with a gypsum ceiling, forget that PVC. Forget that. It might look nice and attractive, but that is a fire hazard by itself. As a matter of fact, you wouldn't even get
to I have to be mindful. There are places that you can use the PVC ceiling, David.
Outdoors.
But I would say mainly not in your main garage and definitely not in your main exposed areas. Understand what I'm saying, David?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The areas where if it melts and if it turns to powder, that it could cause fire spread, you don't want to use it in those areas. So it's not me knocking a particular material, but as we all know, the material is not a material that is going to offer a fire resistance. So as I know you can give all the numbers or callers. I know we normally have a very active period around this time. I know we're heading up to the news time.
Yeah, the news is coming up in just about 9 minutes. 627-3223 and 625-2257. And you can WhatsApp me at 306-1065. Any questions that you might have. Somebody says it gone from 30% to 40%. Big riggers and price fixers are murderers too. Okay, that was something different. Oh, another one is saying, good afternoon, Rogers. Is there something that, is it true that if you have certain materials in your house, you would not be able to get fire insurance? I think that's a question for the insurance agencies. I don't know.
That's a very good question. So the insurance companies, obviously, they would come to the fire service and they would look at the trends in if there's a fire taking place or if one of their insured has I think they were normally sent to the fire service
okay.
to get a report
Before you answer, somebody's now asking, and I think this should tie into the same thing. What are some of the materials that we should not use in our houses? Can Officer Jude advise? So some of the materials when you're building, you should not use. It's not advisable.
Good. I got to answer that question. So let me quickly say, insurance companies would tend to shy away from buildings that they will do their checks that are not constructed with what we'll consider to be fire-resistant material. So that gypsum ceiling is one of the areas that they would look at. But they would not deny you insurance. But they would still look at the percentage of the house that is constructed with a what we consider to be a combustible material. All right? A lot of buildings too have to get the approvals from the fire service, especially buildings where members of the public have to go into. Mm. And so one of the key things the insurance companies are, do you have a fire certificate for your building? Commercial buildings require fire certificates. Mm. Also, buildings where the public has to enter, Davey.
Mm-hmm.
Your malls, even where people may be having dwelling, but it's multi-story, that carries an approval from the fire service because now you have more than just one household living. Your townhouses, your multi-tenanted areas, Davey.
Mm-hmm.
Those are houses that would require some level of material that is non-combustible. So the question now, what type of materials are we suggesting that you utilize in what we would consider
I have a call before you answer that question. Maybe you can.
All right, go ahead.
All right, I lost it. 627-3223, 625-2257. Please feel free to call me back before the news if you wish. 627-3223 and 625-2257. Go ahead, Jude.
Right. So we all know that wood is a carbon-based material. We consider it class A type material. We know that wood, paper, plastics, any type of material like that can readily burn, can easily burn. So when we are outfitting on most of the homes, Davey, that we had long ago, they were made of wood or had a lot of wooden elements. Davey, go back into your grandparents' days.
Mm.
You have concrete walls, but you have wooden floor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It have a nice warm kind of feeling to it. Or you have the lattice. Remember the word lattice, Davey? Remember the nice decorative ply and all of those things, groove ply. All of those things were used in home construction long ago, all of which as the material age. And that's another factor that people don't consider. these material age, and when they age, sometimes they dry rot, they're prone to termites, they're prone to all of that. They become very easily ignitable. Divi is like having leaves and grass and dry grass, and they're easily a candle. Even a spark from an electrical plug can ignite those materials easily, and they readily burn.
But then,
all right?
Well,
so the suggestion is utilize materials that even after 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road does not support burning easily. I'm saying that you cannot fireproof everything, but you can minimize the effects of fires by using materials such as steel I-beams, framework for your roof. Shy away from the wooden material. Go with the beams. Also, I am saying gypsum material is fire rated for a minimum of 2 hours, Davy, that it can withstand and withhold fire on one side without disintegrating within a 2 hour period.
Wow.
Same thing with concrete board. And a number of the roofing material that we use now, and the sheeting that we use, the insulation, the ceiling boards that have gypsum nature, they are fire resistant in nature. So we have to look at these materials, ask the question, say, listen, what's the fire rating on this material? Even the things like red clay blocks, they offer a better fire resistant versus concrete blocks, Davy.
Mm-hmm.
Davy, you're supposed to know that.
True.
Because to make a clay block, you have to put it under a hot, or you bake the block, so to speak. So those blocks carry a certain amount of fire rating. It is the concrete that spoils and cracks, and that can eventually cause a fracture in your wall and the wall members. And some walls are load-bearing walls in your home.
Mm-hmm.
Those walls, you want to have them made out of steel or concrete members to ensure that they would stand the test of time over a lengthy period of time or during a fire scenario. The sad thing about it though, Davy, everything can burn. Because the temperature of a house fire or a building fire sometimes gets up in excess of 700 degrees Celsius. I want you to hear me. Hear what I'm saying. And that temperature can warp. It can warp steel members. So you really want to ensure. And then later on in the second half of the program, Davy, I'm going to tell you, after you build your home now, you outfit it with steel, you use your gypsum, you have concrete walls and so forth. You may have steel casement windows. Even if you use the vinyl windows or what you have, you, Davy. Davy, you know, I have to talk to the ladies, because at the end of the day, you know, they like to put up the lovely drapes and the curtain and all the other things. Now, what you load your home with now, we call that the fire load. The type of material, the bed, the sheets, the mattress, the couch, all of those materials help and aid with fire spread. So I know we're heading up to news, and I want to kind of open the floor and open up people's minds now to begin to say, hey, listen, I built a nice house. Yeah, beautiful. Have I set myself up? Am I placing fire loading material near my exits? Davy, just recently we had a fire in Coover, and two persons would have succumbed to the effects of that fire. Very unfortunate scenario. But there are lessons to be learned from those scenarios. All right? So throughout the country right now, we're looking at that. From the fire service perspective, we're looking at those types of situations and how we can advise the public to avoid the loss of loved ones. Somebody is without a son today. Somebody is without a daughter. Somebody is without a mother as a result of fires. And remember my objective, the objective of the fire service is to eliminate death by fire, Davy.
All right, let's take a break for the news. We're coming back with more Inside Safety Monday. Welcome back, Trinidad and Tobago. 9 minutes, so almost 10 minutes after the hour of 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. We inside with Jude Rogers, Inside Safety Monday. Somebody now messaged me. Good afternoon. I just reached in need of your assistance. My brother messaged me on Friday. He wanted someone who has knowledge in CPR and first aid. It probably have for a workshop in the gym he's at. So could you pass that contact information on? All right, so Jude, people liking that program we did the other day, but they're still talking about it.
Especially public awareness, community centers, persons of that nature who require information as it relates to that, we were asking them if they can pass that information on. Maybe you can give them the contact numbers, or you can take their contacts and we will get in contact with them.
Yeah, I will take their contact and I will send it for you so that you can get in contact with them. So as we continue our discussion this afternoon, we'll be talking about the severity and the seriousness of arson and what it does and the penalties that it carries and that it can carry. And one of the things that I'm realizing is that persons who fail to negate the fact that arson can be classified in some instances bring on board murder charges on an individual. We have Officer Jude Rogers. In case you missed it, we'll continue to recap as we have dialogue throughout the next 30 minutes in our show here on Safety Mondays. Rogers?
Right. So we wanted to talk a little bit about the type of material that you can use in your homes to make it sort of fire resistant. Because as I told you, there is little or nothing that will not burn under the right circumstance. But we cannot minimize the effects. We can minimize the effects. And so to do, you're talking about introducing materials from the building stage, from the construction phase.
Yeah, the construction
phase. You can begin to prepare your homes to minimize that effect. All right, so I said the use of steel instead of wooden members in the roof. We're talking about sealing using fire-resistant materials such as gypsum board. There are some sealants as well that are also fire resistant. So you want to utilize those materials. We talk about kind of staying away from the materials such as PVC sealant. And we talked about how it really does not stand the test of time when placed in a fire scenario. And then we come to the point now, David, what do you put within your home that becomes a fire load? We have certain materials that will readily burn in the event of a fire. Situations such as like your carpet, materials such as drapery, all of these things can become involved. A lot of wooden members within your home. People are using a lot of wooden members. Once you are doing that, you have to step up the amount of detection that you have in your home and also offer some sort of fire protection in the form of extinguishers being in your home in strategic places so that you can actually...
You're breaking up there, real bad. Hello?
Hi, David, tell me if you hear me.
I'm hearing you now.
All right, right. So, yeah, we're giving information. Just remember I told you that we saw that on the move today. But I didn't want to miss out on the program, so we're trying our best to still be able to give you that information that you need on the program. So if you have any questions, I know people may have questions. What type of material you should use?
That was the thing, the burning question. What type of material?
Right? So if anybody has any other questions, because we talked about the different type of blocks that you could use for your render the walls, and then the main thing, what you load your home with in terms of the fire loading, the type of furniture, material that you use. But all of these things can burn. Your mattresses, all of these materials. One of the key things that I can advise is storing flammable liquids within your home is not a good idea. So what you want to do, you may want to put that in a storeroom in an area that is more or less outside of the home or separate from the home.
Which is what? You're kind of cut off again. You kind of drop off again, right. Jude.
Right. So, David, you may want to take some callers so we can get some.
All right. 627-3223, 625-2257. Any question that you have, what it is you would like to... Oh, one texter is saying, Jude, In the event that my house, can you advise as to what the protocols are? Okay, in the event my house is burning, how do I save it? Well, I would imagine you call 990.
Right, so that's actually not a bad question, David, because a lot of people may panic. They may act out out of panic. They may do a lot of different things. A lot of people call for water, which is a key element. But what a lot of people do, as you rightfully said, David, they do not call the fire service. And that's one of the main things that you need to do, because you may think that the fire service is on their way to your home. Nobody made the call. A lot of times, it's your neighbors passing in the road who see the flames. They make the call. But you really want to make that call and begin your evacuation process. Or if you have a fire extinguisher and the fire has not reached the ceiling, you would want to be able to use the fire extinguisher on the fire once you are capable and able to do so.
All right. So you're saying that we should get fire extinguishers and make that part of our whatever we do now. We should order these things and have them. Somebody's now asking, what type of fire extinguisher should we get? And how big should it be? There are different sizes. Jude, we're kind of losing you.
Not a good question. And I'm recommending
the what. Go ahead, we're hearing you clear.
All right, so we're recommending the dry chemical or ABC fire extinguisher, 10 pound for each home. A minimum of, I would even suggest at least two. And if you have more than one floor, you want to have on each floor as well.
So you need multiple extinguishers. Somebody is asking, do you think the time has come for us? Well, I'll give you do you think the time has come that houses should be built with an internal sprinkler system? Meaning it should be made mandatory. I think so. What do you think?
That commenter or that person is definitely onto something, because really and truly the only type of systems that would be able to eliminate a fire are active systems which work whether you're home or not. And a sprinkler system is a system that works automatically in the area that the fire actually starts. So that person is definitely onto something, and that is something that would have to change in terms of legislation and probably even the requirements on the fire service for dwelling homes. Because David, you know the statistics when it comes to house fires. We have an average of 700 fires annually, which amounts to 2 house fires per day. And that says a lot.
All right. Annie, somebody's asking, do you have any statistics? Good, rare messages, boy. Do you have any statistics about any house fires decreasing? Well, it's still on the rise. It's still on the rise. We're still seeing it, right?
Right, so to answer that question, as we analyze the first few months in the year 2024, what we notice is that the fire starts, it holds. Yeah, the starts continue to hold to pre-pandemic levels, which, as we said, amongst the approximately 2 house fires per day. And David, you have been seeing for yourself, members of the public have been seeing for themselves on the news. You've been seeing the amount of fires that have been taking place, and you see it on the news. And it's not just small fires, we're talking about larger type fires that are affecting businesses even and taking the entire property. And of course there is the loss of life as well that is associated with fires, and in particular when arson is involved.
All right, cool. Somebody says sprinklers only work if WASA supplies water.
I did it. I want to tackle that as well too.
All right, you're tackling that too.
I want to tackle that as well too. All right, so a fire system that requires sprinklers is going to have what we call a stored supply of water, a minimum amount of water that is stored specifically for the purpose of firefighting. So therefore, whether there's water in that stored facility from Wassa or not, you should have enough water to eliminate the fire. Also, water that is assigned to sprinkler systems is not used for domestic purposes. So that water never ever runs dry unless you use out all of the water in a fire scenario.
So you will never use out all the water. So how somebody is saying with the little bit of water sprinkling from a sprinkler, how effective is that on buildings?
Right. So just to go into a little bit of the technical side, there's a calculation that has to be worked out as to how much water you will need based on the size of the building, what the building has in it, the fire loading of the building, etc. And that water will last a specific time if the sprinkler heads are open up in a particular location. And so that normally is a minimum of 30 minutes to 1 hour. And that should be enough to actually slow down the spread of fire on a normal fire that can occur from start. So the fire is not allowed to grow to a point where you will not be able to extinguish it then. Again, that's only if you have early detection and a sprinkler system. Most homes are not outfitted. You'll find that more so businesses are outfitted, and those businesses that are high risk, they would be outfitted with that type of system. It's pretty expensive, by the way, though.
It's pretty expensive?
Yeah, the components of a sprinkler system, putting that together and having the technical know-how knowledge installed, is going to cost a little bit more than your normal systems that you would have. So, you know, it's normally reserved for companies and so forth. But I know persons who have actually installed that in what they would consider to be high-value buildings, even if that is a dwelling.
Another texter is saying, Officer Jude Rogers, okay, this is piggybacking off the last text. Can we make it? Let me take this call before I give you that one. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, sir. I want to find out something. Let's say you wire your premises this year, right? How long after, let me say, 6 years, 7, 8 years, you do a recheck and make sure everything, you know, still standing good? If you understand my question?
Repeat it.
Okay, let's say you wire your premises this year. A complete job, right? How long after, what if it's 5, 6, 7, 8 years or 9 years, you should do a recheck. Make sure everything intact.
All right.
You know, these things can last forever.
All right. So, okay, Judy's asking after how many years you rewire your house, you should go back and check on it again.
All right. So that's a very good question. And under the electrical inspectorate, the time frame that you are given for reinspection, recertification is every 5 years for dwelling homes. And I believe for businesses, it's a shorter period of time for commercial properties, right? But definitely for households, it's 5 years.
For 5 years. And buildings.
Yeah, could you repeat the question, Davy?
Buildings. How many? I have a next text coming here. Is fire services still... Is it that the fire service still take church? What is? I don't understand that. You'll have to resend that to me. I don't understand it. Another text came in. Davy, the last program, we talked about the inefficiencies or insufficiencies of fire services. What is the average response time that the fire officers should reach a location should they get that fire call?
Okay, so, Davy, again, we have a lot of intelligent callers, a lot of intelligent texters. In terms of response, let me explain something in terms of response. We have certain set guidelines in terms of the amount of time that it takes us to leave the station if the appliances are actually in station. Sometimes a number of calls, so we have a set deadline of 30 seconds in the day and 60 seconds at night to leave from wherever we are in the station and get on the appliance and be out of the station compound responding to any emergency calls. However, if the appliances are already out of the station, which is the case in a lot of scenarios, we're already out, dealing with a particular call, we will have to treat with whatever we're dealing with and then respond afterwards, depending on the severity. Now, there are certain things we teach priority. In addition to that, maybe you know what happens on the nation's roadway and the variables change. So the time it takes us to get to any given property has a lot to do with the road conditions, has a lot to do with the traffic level.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we have sirens, vehicles still have to make their way off the roadway to allow the fire plans to travel. And sometimes that slows down the process. All right? So that is a variable factor that depends on the road usage and the condition of the roadway and accessibility of the person's property.
Somebody is asking me, when comes to dealing with the, well, I want you to put this out there in the public. Eh? Somebody mentioned to me that that emergency vehicles should use the shoulder. All right. What is the correct procedure when a fire tender is en route to respond to an emergency? What should motorists do? Before you answer that question, let's take this call. Hello?
Yes, good afternoon again.
Good afternoon.
5 years, you should check your premises, right? What I would like to find out, if that depends on how much appliances, how much heavy duty appliances you have in your house also. Would that be make a difference?
Repeat the question.
No, he said every 5 years, I was talking about
electrical. Okay. I got it. Thanks. I'll ask him. Okay. So what you're saying is that, you said every 5 years for the house and that kind of thing, but that does that apply if you have heavy duty appliances in your house as well?
Okay, so again, that is a question to that is governed by the acts that govern the electrical inspectorate.
Mm.
All right, because they are the ones that set the time frame within which you have to reinspect or be recertified. What I do on what we do in our, from the fire service level is advise members of the public about what the electrical inspectorate has to provide them with. Before you could have gotten a connection to the TNT grid, needed to supply the Trinity Tobago Electricity Commission with a certificate stating that they would have granted you permission to get your wiring or connection. You have to renew that. There's a time frame. So again, they distinguish between households and commercial and probably even industrial properties. So that question may have to be directed to the electrical inspectorate when it comes to heavy duty equipment. But Davey, caller has a point.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of homes today that are operating as homes, but they're really industrial premises because they are running businesses from their home.
Yeah. And they have heavy duty.
They would need to have a shorter time span before inspections because they may be running the risks of overloading certain circuits as they expand their businesses.
Somebody is asking.
This is something that they have to look at.
What about taking, what are some of the dangers persons can face with having commercial business running out of a home that was designated for residential purposes?
All right, well, again, there's the challenge now of having heavy duty equipment, having overloading circuits. And of course, we've talked about the dangers of overloading circuits at length on this program. And maybe I have seen persons who have converted their normal home into mini-marts, into supermarkets, into hardwares, running out of your home. And they are adding appliances upon appliances too. And when I talk about appliances, we're talking about deep fridge, refrigerators, air conditioned, water heaters, all these factors, all these things are being added. Chillers, even heavy-duty equipment that you're using to do construction. Printing and all of these things, and did they take into consideration the setting up the electrical wiring in the home? Not only the wiring, but you have some materials that generate heat, and there's no ventilation in the property, and so the materials that you use in for your home is definitely, and the outlets that you have for your home is not the same that you're going to use as you begin to change into a business format, and we've noticed that. We've noticed that when some fires, when we've investigated some of the fires, seen the cause, and we've seen it right there, these persons would have converted their properties into more or less what we call commercial properties, but still running under the guise of a household.
So you're saying that persons need to seek the correct channels when they want to convert the residential space into a commercial space because of the dangers that exist with having these heavy-duty equipment there. It poses a different type of challenge. But is there any legality to it? Is there anything illegal about it?
I am sure that there is, Davey, but of course some more research has to be done to guide members of the public. And maybe when we come on the next program, I will let you know of some of the laws that may be in conflict with that very same question that you asked.
All right. Well, here's a very interesting question coming from one of our texters. What does a fire officer do? Well, he says, what does a fireman do in a station that has no fire appliances? So what he is doing, all they come to work.
Okay, so there may be some stations that may not have appliances, but again, that's digressing from the program, right? So remember what I focus on, Davey, and I really want to address something. I don't have the authority to address.
Excellent.
So if you have a question that is related to fire,
I hope that answers the question.
This particular arson program, I'd be more than happy to answer that question.
Of course not. This is what we do. This is what we do. I'm just giving my listeners the hearing. Yeah. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Davey. I'm on the program listening about this fire. Listen, I want to ask if I could get a fire extinguisher to buy, because I'm a 84-year-old lady that lives alone, and the things that is happening now, I'm very scared to be alone.
All right, so you want to know where you can get a fire extinguisher. All right, Jude, a fire extinguisher, where can it be purchased?
All right, so Davey, again, this program is designed specifically for callers such as the one that just called. There are safety companies throughout Trinidad and Tobago that have certified fire extinguishers. And when I say certified, it carries a minimum standard, such as Underwriters Laboratory, or it may carry an NFP, which is a fire protection rating, and so forth. So I'm going to tell the caller. It is very, very easy. Long ago, we used to have the yellow pages, and on the extinguisher, you see the numbers. Now, remember, as a fire officer, I'm not able to highlight or pinpoint specific companies, but I can direct you to Google. I can direct you to fire extinguishers in Trinidad and Tobago, and they throughout in the Point Jesus area, East West Corridor, and in San Fernando, all of those places have safety, reputable safety companies that you can go to and get your fire extinguishers. And while you're at it, caller, make sure and install battery-operated smoke detectors in every bedroom.
That is a must. You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you is pertaining to how often we should, and this is a gentle reminder, how often we should deal with safety prevention. Evacuation safety drills. How often we should do that. I wanted to remind our listeners on that as well, because I think that is very important as to how often we should do it and how and what is the correct way to do it.
So for your evacuation procedures in your home, we have little children, we have adults, we may have senior citizens. I would suggest that you do a drill every twice a year. In some instances, if things change up in your property, you renovate, you'll want to do it quarterly. But I am suggesting at least twice a year you run a drill. Talk to members about the different exits. Talk to members of the home about where they are going to assemble when you leave the property. Talk to members about making sure all of your exits are available. And also remember that important factor to dial 990. And then and only then, if you have a fire extinguisher in your property that is serviceable and ready for use, and you are capable of using it, by all means, if you discover the fire in the early stages, you can use your fire extinguisher to extinguish the fire. Remember, rule of thumb, if the fire has already crossed and has reached its ceiling, that level of flame is not something that you can use a fire extinguisher to extinguish. You'll want to call the fire service and get them involved.
All right, so here's the next question. Let's talk about Oh my gosh, what is happening to me this afternoon, Jude? I have so much in my head right now this afternoon. These things are just, oh my gosh. I had the question there for you, you know. All right, let's just continue to give persons information that they need to know about the protocols when it comes to, oh, I now remember my trend of thought. Fires that persons don't report. You know, sometimes they're able to extinguish the blaze and get rid of it before it reaches out there. Let's talk a little bit about the importance of letting fire officers know that you had a fire situation, you were able to get it under control, extinguish the blaze, what have you. How important is that to report it to the fire services? What are some of the dangers of not doing it?
Right. So we have scenarios where persons would have had a fire in their home. It may have been confined to one room. They extinguish the fire and they do not report it to the fire service. And then later down the road, they may be trying to get some form of assistance, whether it is governmental assistance, whether it is from well-wishers within the community, or they may have lost certain documents that require, let's say, your passport or your ID card or your driver's permit.
Mm.
Marriage certificate, birth certificates. Those are documents that to have them replaced, you may need what is considered to be a fire report or a report from the fire service indicating that you did indeed have a fire. But if you never reported it and we never visited, how can we generate a report? So it's important that you recognize that a fire is an abnormal occurrence and it is reportable by law to the fire service.
In addition to that, we can have damages at your house as well. So wires would be broken, the wall. We need to check the infrastructure. The fire services will come in and they will do a check and a comprehensive, thorough walkthrough as to whether anything electrical was damaged. Because you may tell yourself nothing was damaged, but the heat in the wall, we don't know the extent of the fire. They don't know. So when they come in and they do an assessment, they will be able to determine, listen, you need to rewire this area here. You need to check this. You need to call an electrician. You can't know. But calling and reporting it to them is vital. Because, I mean, you want to prevent further occurrences in the future, right? You don't want that to happen again. It may have been the children playing with matches or a candle. But the next one could be an electrical fire and you may not be there. So calling in the fire department will tell you exactly what is happening with the structure of the building. They will be able to do comprehensive checks. Now, I'm not a fire officer, so I'll give you all that. And I'm just waiting for Jude to nod and say, yes, that is it.
So Davey, I once told you, and I will repeat it, that you are an honorary fire officer.
Honorary fire.
And that has been because the kind of knowledge that we've been doing the program almost over a year.
We have an anniversary. Went already, man.
I think the information is sticking in your brain, Davey.
Yeah, so, I tell you. It's so unfair.
And I want to reach out to callers.
Yeah, it's unfair.
Especially
callers.
My friend, my 84-year-old friend, who is a bit scared. Mm-hmm. And we can eliminate that fear by having the detectors and the fire extinguishers there at your home.
You see, when it comes to fire safety and fire prevention, it starts with you. The fire officers don't prevent fires. They do not come and, stop a fire from happening. What they do, they prevent the spread of fires, most instances, because the fire would have already engulfed a particular area. They reach on the scene. We don't know how Trinidadian is or in Trinidad what's going on the roads. Jude explained it a little while ago, but they say when your neighbor house burning through water by you. So what the fire officers do, they come to help assist in saving lives, rescuing persons, protecting property. So you might say, but my whole house burned down. But yeah, your property burned down, but they protect the neighbors. The next door neighbors, the street behind you, you understand? They protect the tent lamppost, because if the lamppost burn and fall on, it could take out power in the entire block or even the community. So property and life, if your property was well alit and they got there through the hazardous traffic situations, conditions, whatever they face on en route to you, when they get there, they can try their best to salvage whatever it is. But if your house was completely gutted, then please don't say they didn't save property. They did. Because in their absence, that fire would have no doubt spread to other adjacent buildings, causing further damage in the millions. So they do protect property and life. But it starts with
well
you.
Well said, baby.
Yeah.
Well said.
It starts with you. Well, it starts with you. You are the ones that are the fire prevention officers. You can prevent it. You. All ever hear about Smokey the Bear? And Smokey the Bear, they say, you can prevent forest fires. And Smokey doesn't say that. Smokey the Bear does come and say, you can prevent forest fires. So it's that. Then it's field fire officers can prevent these things. You know, all they can't prevent these things. All these superhuman all is. Because all the fire officers, all the supermen, all they can't prevent it. You all can come on the scene when it happens, but your job, their job, is to educate you. That's how they prevented it, by educating you. This program, Safety Mondays, we normally just go for hour. We well over the hour right now, and Jude happy like papi all the time. Every Monday, we reaching past the stage because the show is growing. And we thank Connect Texas saying, Davey, you are absolutely correct. It starts with us. My son was playing with a candle a few years ago, and I didn't know that I should have reported the fire. Is it against the law if I don't? Okay. We ain't going to sell you out, eh? But it's a good question for future. So, Jude, take this one. Is it against the law? What law is in place for a person who do not report fires?
It has to do with, especially if it's a fire that is of a nature that's incendiary, meaning like it was arson, and that's the topic that we on today, arson, right? Those are reportable incidents, and I'll do a little more research here, David, to find out if there are any particular fines involved in that or if there's any jail time. But definitely persons who would raise a fire willfully, we know that if that building is occupied by other humans at the time when they would have, whether they know or they did not know, that upon conviction carries a life imprisonment sentence.
Yeah.
If a person, the building was empty and just had materials, et cetera, et cetera, that carries a 10-year sentence for willful raising of fire. But definitely reporting those incidents is a responsibility of persons, especially if you are the owner and you were to discover that, you would want to report that to the fire service.
Jude, I want to say thank you very much today. Yeah. Another brilliant fire services show, Safety Mondays, here on Freedom. Wherever you are traversing to, sir, I want you to be safe. You and all. I mean, we have one caller coming in as we're about to close. Good afternoon.
Afternoon. I would just want to big up the fireman and him. Because I was two years ago exactly, I was in an accident in the Caron Road there before the cremation site. A guy just swung onto my line of traffic and I hit him head on with a Honda van. And I was spinning that van. I couldn't come out. So they were real professional. These guys them kind of lead to a first time I get ready, call to pick them up. But they were real professionals. They put brace on my neck before the thing with the jaw fly kick. Now I'm watching that car stick up in your vehicle and it's smoking. Oh, and you know what going on. All kind of things going into your mind, eh? And these fellas them are so professional and nice. I just want to pick them up. I believe if I'm shotgun, I ain't sure. But around
thank
the
you.
Area.
So thank you.
Just listen off here.
Thank you very much. So Jude Rogers, you and the Fire Service Department of Trinidad and Tobago came in for some resounding praises from this very, very, very grateful and appreciative motorist that had an RTA a couple years ago, and you all came there. What he talked about, you all didn't just save his life, but the courteous, the kindness that you all showed, the empathy that the officers displayed with trying. Yeah, look at you. You're driving stupid. No, we had to come here and cut you out. No, Bacchanal. Are you okay, sir? Please keep calm. You all were able to reassure him. All will be well. You know, you didn't come here with a quarreling spirit because they could do it, you know. Because we get fed up. Oh, they're driving like fools on the road. Now we had to come out here and save you. You understand? Look at the stupidness. I'm about to leave you like you're dead. That wasn't the words of the officers. But that empathetic way that you all deal with persons, you all came in for some high praises from this grateful and appreciative citizen. And kudos going out to you. We have some texts coming in. Nice program, Davey, as usual. The contact number for the CPR workshop. If you give me, I will give it to Jude. Jude, I'm actually sending you a message now from this person that wants to do the workshop.
Yeah, send the number, send the contact number and the name or just the number and we'll give them a call.
All right, so I'm actually...
Also, I want to thank the callers, all who participated in the program this afternoon.
Yeah, I'm actually sending it to you now and I will give them your contact as well. All right. So the number is sent to your phone. This is the person that wants to get in touch with you. An experience with fire officers coming to my residence. Davey, you are correct. My house was completely gutted. But the officers on the scene comforted me. The ladies, they hugged me. They offered me, one fire officer offered me a pair of shoes and some sandals. I even got some hand-me-downs from officers who had children for my young children. So the officers really do go above and beyond, and they should be recognized for it. Another one says, Davey, officers are not recognized enough when they save persons' lives in this country. Thanks very much to that caller for highlighting the officers and shining them up this afternoon in a positive way. Yeah, so another one says some officers would actually give the clothes off their back in order to see a victim happy. Jude, you giving off the clothes off your back to save a victim? Well done. That's good. So you're only coming in for some good praises this afternoon, boy. I want to be a fireman. You know, that's the one job I didn't get to do, boy. I do everything. I had a dream to be a fireman, you know, and I'm too old for it now, you know. I'm too young, I should say, you know. I'm getting younger every day. I'm getting younger, Jude. I'm getting younger. So, every Mondays from 4:30, Jude joins us. They say Jude is the hot man. Somebody said Jude is the hot man and not Davey. I'm going to take that. Nope. No pun intended. He literally is a hot man. Trust me. I had the opportunity of hanging out with that man in Bago a few months back, and the man wet. The man is a wet man. You know what we just call a wet? The man is a whole tea, that man. First, the man wet. They talk about vibes. We had a little lime, a little session we was in together. Real vibes with that man. Real vibes. I see the man play in a band and all. We just call them bands and them rhythm section. The man get on bad. And here what? He's a Trinity. It's hard. He was beaten in time. He ponged that iron in time. He catch the beat well. So big up Jude Rogers. Safety Mondays, another brilliant show this afternoon. Jude, thank you so much to you and the officers for your, you know, for putting your lives on the line. Each and every day you all go out to work. All watches, blue, red, green, and black. Big up the entire watch. Yeah, I know the watch. Trust me. All right. So to all the officers with you, we say much love and thanks. Take care of yourself, buddy. See you next Monday.
Now, a station that's giving you back the power to speak your mind. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.